anarchism, a social philosophy which aims at the emancipation, economic, social, political, and spiritual, of the human race.
Anarchism is not bombs, disorder, or chaos. It is not robbery or murder. It is not a war of each against all.
Anarchism is the very opposite of all that. Find out for yourself. Tune into Subversion 1312.
Live, Tuesdays, 9 to 10pm.
On 4ZZZ 102.1 FM or streaming 4ZZZ.org.au.
Podcasts and related content available at subversion1312.org.
And channelzeronetwork.com.
Conclusion?
We stand for anarchy, anti-capitalism, anti-racism, anti-authoritarianism, internationalism,
autonomy, direct democracy, ecology, self-organization, solidarity, anti-fascism, anti-neoliberalism,
anti-nationalism, atheism, equality, and freedom.
Where did you get this?
Your friendly neighborhood anarchist.
More of an anarchist militant.
People involved in social struggles than everybody else.
People have been waiting for some content.
Radio and show.
The final straw, and I'm William Goodenough.
And I'm Percy Goodness.
The final straw radio.noblogs.org.
If you're listening, you are the resistance.
When everybody leaves you lonely, times are west and sad, and the world is falling on your head. Just remember, for all you know, good or bad, come on, babe. You're gonna live tomorrow if you don't die today. To fall in love. Now the fear got in me, it's gotten me deep. That's where it's gonna stay and never leave. Someone come lay my worry, someone come kill my pain, someone come and put me on my feet again. To fall in love, we gotta love one another. That's what the good man says. But I got too much trouble going round my head. To fall in love.
You're on 4ZZZ 102.1 FM. Claude, the anarchist dog, is wanting to have something to say. Unfortunately, he doesn't have a voice on the radio, unlike many, many people in the community who can have a voice on the radio. 4ZZZ, you're listening to Subversion 1312, the Anarchy Show. My name is Linda, and on tonight's show, I did an interview today, which I'm going to play with a woman from the sex worker advocacy group, Respect. Also, I'm going to be talking about Peter Dutton and hopefully putting another nail in his coffin. And yeah, there's also events in Australia, in Brisbane, for International Women's Day as well, including one actually on Friday night, somewhere near the Rumpers Room in West End. Yesterday was International Sex Worker Rights Day. I spoke to Alina Jeffries, who is a doctor of political science and international studies and a sex worker. She travelled from Townsville to be involved in activities. The group Respect is having this week because of International Sex Worker Rights Day. I spoke to her today, and first of all, I asked her about Respect. I'm rolling my R's. I'm trying to practice rolling my R's. Respect.
Oh, my name's Alina Jeffries. I'm a sex worker here in Queensland, and I'm currently the state coordinator at Respect Incorporated, which is a statewide sex worker organisation, and we have offices in Gold Coast, Brisbane, Cairns and Townsville.
Can you tell me some more about what Respect does?
Yeah, so Respect Inc. is an autonomous sex worker organisation. We are sex worker only. We're fully independently incorporated. We have a membership structure, and anyone who is a current or past sex worker is welcome to join Respect. And then once a year we elect a 9-person board, and that board has affirmative action for a few different roles as well. So we always make sure we have a male spokesperson, a trans spokesperson. There's affirmative action for someone from non-English speaking background, and there's affirmative action for people who are from regional areas that are more than 200 kilometres from one of our offices. At our offices, we have sex workers safer space drop-ins most days of the week. So sex workers can come in, have a cup of coffee, talk about issues, pick up supplies, do workshops, do Skillshare, do networking. And we also do policy advocacy. So every 6 months we tell the government what we think is going on with sex worker issues across Queensland. We draw broadly from what sex workers have told us during that period. And we also have input into broader HIV and STI policy from a sex worker perspective. And at the moment, we're also running a law reform campaign. A group of volunteer sex workers have set up a subcommittee using the Respect infrastructure. And that volunteer subcommittee has been working really hard for over a year to raise the profile of what the laws are in Queensland and what the laws we would like them to be. And what we want is for a decriminalisation of sex work, full decriminalisation of sex workers, ourselves, our clients and third parties associated with sex work.
What's the difference between legal brothels and what you're saying is criminalised?
30 years ago, when the Fitzgerald Inquiry reported here in Queensland, they found that there'd been systemic corruption in relation to police and the operation of brothels and sex work in Queensland. In 1999, the Beattie government brought in a boutique licensing regime for certain brothels of a certain shape and size are allowed to apply. It costs about $30,000 to apply for a license for them to be able to open and run as a maximum 5-room, 8 sex workers on premises at any time, full service brothel. And so we have about 20 of those in Queensland at the moment, and they're all in southeast Queensland except for one. And so that caters for a really specific kind of sex work. And then everyone else in Queensland is not covered by the licensing regime. So private workers, co-op workers, massage parlours, everything, including BDSM salons. No one else is permitted to obtain a license within that system. And what we're campaigning for with full decriminalisation is to remove the onerous licensing system and police regulation, and to let us be regulated by existing laws, existing workplace relation laws, current industrial relation laws. We want to be regulated and have the same recourse to justice like any other worker in Queensland, whereas at the moment we don't have access to any kind of justice. In fact, we're the ones being prosecuted.
There's companies, and it's legal, isn't it, that they say there's people available for escorts and there's websites for that?
If you work as an individual, you are meant to, by the law, work completely alone. You're not able to share overheads or information with another worker. We're not legally allowed to text another worker about the escort booking we're going to, what the address is and when it's finished and who the client was. I mean, all the kind of stuff that you'd do for safety with any kind of work that involves going to someone else's premises. In Queensland, we're meant as individual workers to do it completely alone. So while it is within the boundaries of the law to advertise on an escorting site, we're not allowed to do those other basic safety strategies that anyone who's an individual worker or contract worker would expect to be able to do in their day-to-day work.
What I'm also wondering about is the difference between male sex workers and female sex workers, the difference in how they're perceived by the public.
Yeah, it's absolutely true that the stereotype of what a sex worker is quite limited in people's minds to cisgendered women, generally under 30 and of a certain body type and a certain socioeconomic status. But actually, the truth couldn't be more different. The sex industry is quite diverse. There are male sex workers in Queensland. There are also transgender and non-binary sex workers in Queensland. The industry is quite diverse. And I think a lot of that diversity gets lost in the kind of stereotyping of who we are. That stereotyping really works against understanding us as a diverse community that has a whole bunch of needs that aren't being filled by the police activity against sex workers.
You're listening to 4ZZZ, the Aniki Show, Subversion 1312, and tonight I've got an interview with Elena Jeffries, who is involved in a sex worker advocacy group, which is called Respect. Yesterday was International Sex Worker Rights Day, and there was an event held in King George Square, which sought to draw attention to the very real issues which affect sex workers, one of which, and probably a main one of which, is safety. So the interview will continue after this song by NoFX, which is called Laurie Myers.
We'll be right back.
there's a difference in the laws in the different states?
Yeah, every state and territory in Australia has different laws in relation to sex work. It's part of the structure of the Federation of Australia that states and territories have the power to make different laws. And so in Australia, across each state and territory, we've literally got just about every kind of different model of sex work laws that you can imagine. We have what is known as a licensing regime in Queensland and in Victoria. In Queensland, escorting for brothels is illegal. In the Northern Territory, brothels are only allowed to do escorting. They can't do on-site bookings. Then in South Australia and Western Australia, sex work is still criminalised by some very old laws that are more than 100 years old. In Tasmania, they don't allow brothels, but individual private workers are allowed to work in pairs. And then in New South Wales, we have almost full decriminalisation. So if you're a proctor or work in a brothel or a massage parlour or BDSM, all of that is regulated just like any other job. Unfortunately, street-based sex workers have been singled out and still do face a fair bit of police harassment in New South Wales. So they haven't gone all the way there, but New South Wales has got a pretty good model, and we often in Queensland look to New South Wales. A lot of sex workers in Queensland travel to New South Wales for work because the working conditions are so much better.
So bearing that in mind, the different laws in the states, in Queensland, are sex workers safer than they were years ago? And which laws in different states do you think would help sex workers be safer in Queensland?
Unfortunately, the licensing model in Queensland has led to sex workers being less safe than it was in the 80s when sex work was just out and out criminalised, but at least the police were, because they were running it in a corrupt manner, there was some sort of stability to the industry. We now have a situation where police are in a prosecutorial role all the time, and the criminalisation in particular of us being able to, we're criminalised if we work in pairs, we're criminalised if we work in groups, it's definitely less safe. And it was only like a few years into the licensing model in Queensland that the Queensland government commissioned their own report to try to figure out if the laws had made sex workers' lives better or worse. Very early on, after the licensing model had been brought in Queensland, the Queensland government actually commissioned a report by an academic named Anne Edwards. She went through, they did interviews and questionnaires and went through all the data, and she concluded very early on that the licensing model makes sex work less safe in Queensland than sex work had been previously when it was criminalised. So we are in a situation where every single day sex workers have to choose between working safely or working legally. If we choose to implement safety tactics in our everyday work, then we're at risk of ourselves attracting a criminal charge, and then also the other people in our sex worker community that we've leaned on for support, we've put them in the line of fire of police as well.
International Women's Day is coming up, and there's been, a clash between feminists who say that sex work is not something that helps women, and then feminists and sex workers who advocate for sex work and view it as a legitimate job. Can you please address those issues that people who are against sex work have?
I would start by saying that the notion that sex work is inherently exploitative totally overlooks the fact that all of us in neoliberal capitalist economy are putting ourselves in a situation so that we can earn money, and that often in those environments there's potential for exploitation. There's nothing more or less exploitative about being a sex worker than any other kind of worker. However, it is the case that there are sections of anti-sex work feminists that completely overlook sex workers' labour needs and conveniently say it's not, they don't want to talk about it in the framework of work and industrial rights and workplace issues and labour rights. And that really puts a massive dent in the sex worker rights movement claims and demands for decriminalisation. So sex workers have spoken. We want police removed as regulators. Anti-sex work feminists are very much, we can call them incarceral feminists. They're pro-prison and they are quite happy to see sex workers and our clients being regulated and harassed by police. The feminist movement really needs to move beyond the rhetoric of anti-sex work whorephobia and recognise that sex workers are speaking and we are saying that it is work and it is our voices that should be the most important. We don't see it as a debate. We see it as our voices central to any questions in relation to sex work, and by turning it into a debate, it's actually a silencing mechanism to derail what we've already said and to not address the issue of labour rights.
I support 4ZZZ and independent radio because it's the right thing to do. Support your local community, support the people that support you. The end.
We just heard from the police, not the actual police, but the police, the band, of course, with Roxanne, and that was following on from the second part of my interview with Elena Jeffries, who is part of the sex worker advocacy group Respect. It's interesting what Elena says about sex workers being safer in the 80s in Queensland when there was rampant corruption, and considering the political climate at the time. And basically, I mean, it means that sex worker rights and safety have gone backwards since the Joe Bjelke-Petersen era. And just let that sink in. Like, you know, you think of it as like the worst time in Queensland, but in fact, things are worse now for sex workers. If you'd like to inform yourself further about sex worker rights and even the arguments around sex work being seen as work, or even the arguments around this feminist issue about whether or not sex work is legitimate and that women should be doing sex work as feminists, you can visit the website, which is respectqld.org.au. And talking about Queensland and the 80s and corruption, I'm going to play Police State by The Great Shame. You're on 4ZZZ. Move,
speaking from Manus Prison. You are listening to Subversion 1312 and 4ZZZ.
What the fuck? when we talking to our folks and they love to relate. Shaking in the booth when we start the fun. They ain't scared of rap music, they're scared of us. This is that shit that the popo say when we talking to our folks and they love to relate. Shaking in the booth when we start the fun. They ain't scared of rap music, they're scared of us.
My lyrics on parking tickets and summons to the court. I scribbled this on an application for county support. I practice this like a sport. Met Donald Trump and he froze up. Standing on his Bentley yelling, pimps down, hoes up. Stop trying to front off, break our ass a clump off. We gon' stop the world, make y'all motherfuckers jump off. Watch me chunk off Molotovs and bricks. Mr. Bailiff, you can put that in the transcripts. Is you a have or you a have not, huh? When you run out of bullets, grab rocks or throw ham hocks. Cause the dough to the pen slam locks. It don't open when your fam knocks, unless you rich and have stocks. I eat my dinner out of spam box. They carry cash off in glad locks. This is for them babies with them empty plates. This is that shit that the popos hate.
This is that shit that the popos hate. When we talking to our folks and they love to relate. Shaking in the booth when we start the bus. They ain't scared of rap music, they scared of us. This is that shit that the popos hate. When we talking to our folks and they love to relate. Shaking in the booth when we start the bus. They ain't scared of rap music, they scared of us.
Life in the game, showing no remorse and no shame. Bought share of both things due to the dealing of cocaine in my brain. I know it's wrong, but a job would take too long. I'm robbing niggas at gunpoint just to keep my PG&E on. Nigga, we own cognac and narcotics to keep from going neurotic. Pushing the product, powder is solid, we got it. I shot at my partner, dropped the chopper in the lab. This shit is a trap, promoting the black on black. A systematic attack on me and my race. Face it, find a way out this cycle before I'm 6 feet deep in the dirt. The consequence of putting in work, these money and hoes and clothes ain't worth it. Even though my pockets is hurting. For certain, it's gonna be curtains if I keep on curb serving. As you get older, you just realize, man, it's human nature to have things. But I gotta get out the game. Dope beans shouting my name. Temptation calling. Well, I sacrifice my life in order to be balling. It's all in time.
This is that shit that the popos hate. When we talking to our folks and they love to relate. Shaking in the booth when we start the fun. They ain't scared of rap music, they scared of us. This is that shit that the popos hate. When we talking to our folks and they love to relate. Shaking in the booth when we start the fun. They ain't scared of rap music, they scared of us.
Two songs there about police. All cops are bastards. 1312. You are on 4ZZZ 102.1 FM. I love saying all those numbers. Now, we heard those two songs about the police. Police State by The Great Shame and What the Popos Hate by The Coup. And now I'm going to talk about Peter Dutton, who is a former police officer. People really, like, the tide has really turned. I mean, I think he wasn't really popular anyway, and even back last decade he was having trouble holding on to his seat, but somehow he did make it and made it as far to fail in an attempted coup. Was a coup to get rid of Malcolm Turnbull, but he ended up being short on numbers, and that's one of the things that people like to joke about him, is that he can't count to 43. Frequently, a tweet is sent, and people turn the ensuing collective thread into comic gold. The Twitter sphere has turned on our embattled Minister for Home Affairs, Peter Dutton. I feel almost sorry for a Dutton who really does come across as a complete loser. Then I realised this man who led the charge to spend millions or even billions of dollars preventing sick people, including many children, from getting the appropriate care. This is the man responsible for the death of refugees on Nauru and Manus, and he is also responsible for deaths on onshore detention, including two in the last 6 weeks in Villawood in Sydney. This man is tearing families apart because one of the parents was not born in the right country with the right money or indeed the right connections if you're an au pair. This man has removed a family from a town where they are loved and appreciated and put them in a detention centre. That family includes young children who are experiencing great deal of depression because of their situation. The list goes on, but it is clear that Dutton is devoid of compassion and normal human feelings. So I assume the media advisors do Dutton's social media, and the Home Affairs Department spends $8 million a year on media, on PR. So one would assume that they would consider the public's likely response when they write tweets. But they dropped this tweet and basically invited the 871 replies, of which over 90% were paying out on the soon-to-be former minister. And actually, last night there weren't 871, but I did go through all of them insomnia, so I can't sleep. So I went through all of them, and yeah, probably by that stage over 90%. But now I've sort of rounded it down because maybe some people have come out in support of him. And the tweet was this: if Bill Shorten has measured the curtains at the lodge and a list of ambassador appointments settled, is it too much to ask who his Home Affairs Minister would be? Hashtag is it Shane, and that's referring to the Shadow Immigration Minister, Shane Newman. So bam, the replies started. At Sarah Ruby writes, she replied, "Mate, you can't even measure a half a billion dollars going missing right under your nose. Or was that deliberate?" Hashtag Paladin Affair, which is the company they gave half a million dollars to, and they don't really know what's going on. And then the Matador 66 says, the only thing Dutton needs to be measured up for is a brand new set of prison greens. So it keeps going. At Pat Puri 9 said, isn't it logical that one should wait to see which members are elected before naming them a Home Affairs Minister? Hashtag Auspol, hashtags is it rocket science. And yeah, various people also pointed out that he's basically conceding defeat, that the Liberal Party won't win. But then, so there's a refugee who's in Christmas Island. He's in Christmas Island, and his name is Nauru's Anees, and he was the one that was the whistleblower who came out, who alleges that people are paying bribes to be let out of immigration detention up to the price or around the price of $80,000, who was in detention, and he says he had a conversation with this person whose last name is Betham, and that he found out about this issue where people are offering bribes. And there's actually an investigation into that right now, but after he wrote an article in Medium after he did that, and then there was an Age article about it, suddenly he was threatened with deportation straight away. And then on the weekend, he had his medications withdrawn. He wasn't able to get his medications. So a lot of people think that that is maybe payback. And I'm getting right into Twitter at the moment, so you can go to @forloveandfreedom, and that is the account of Nehru's Nez. And also one Twitter user who I mentioned at the beginning is @SarahRubyWrites, and I'd also recommend following her. I'm going to go to a song now. It's called Sunset Strip by the Riptides, and then I'm going to come back and talk about some of the things that Peter Dutton has fucked up. The Riptides and Sunset Strip. And we don't want to be dwelling too much on Peter Dutton. And in fact, Gerald Keeney, local artist, actually has argued quite extensively that we should not be even thinking of Peter Dutton, and we shouldn't even, I mean, who's Peter Dutton? We don't know. That's the kind of thing. So, yeah. But some of the things that people like to mention to give him a mention for, Don mentions that he tackled Green Senator Kerry Nettle to stop her talking to George W. Bush when Bush addressed our parliament in 2003 or 2004. Abbott, I talked about this at the time, Abbott and Morrison and Dutton at this Pacific Islands conference made this joke about how the Pacific Islanders will be having water lapping on their door. And also Craig says he did an interview and where in the space of 90 seconds he said that refugees come here and take our jobs, but also that they can't speak English, so they'll be on welfare. And I believe he also said that they were illiterate in their own country. So also he says, Craig says, getting up in the morning, maybe fair enough, and also campaigning in his electorate on state issues, which have nothing to do with him as a federal member. And he's talking about using billboard ads for that. Also, him recently, lying about the effect of the Medivac bill on hospital waiting lists. So he's come out and he said, oh, if the sick refugees come to Australia, then hospital waiting queue lists will go up and Australians will be forced to wait longer for their medical treatment because I think people say it could be, it's like less than 1,000 people are coming to Australia, and this is a country of like 25 million people. So lots of people like to point out that if the hospital system can't cope with 1,000 extra people, then there's something very, very wrong with it. And that related to that is also that he's being voted the worst health minister of all time. And when I say all time, I'm talking right back to the Big Bang. He also saw a spying operation on Sarah Hanson-Young. He called a female journalist a mad witch, and there's a Facebook page called Mad Fucking Witches, which is quite good value. So actually, you know, the list goes on and on and on and on and on, but we're not going to have time or the inclination to talk about all of those tonight. It's time for another song talking about Gerald Keeney and Gerald Keeney and the Gerald Keeneys, and I just made a reference to one of their songs, which is Big Bang. We're going to hear a song from them now called No Guru. You're on 4ZZZ 102.1 FM. Jethro Keeney and the Gerald Keeneys and No Guru. I'm going to mention these International Women's Day events. In England, in London, there's the women's strike happening at the Bank of England. So that'll be interesting. And also in Brisbane, there's the International Working Women's Day Rally, and it's happening from 1 till 3:30 on Saturday. It's at Queen's Gardens. There's actually two International Women's Day events. There's one starting at 10 a.m. I have chosen to do an interview tonight with someone from the Sex Worker Alliance. That is because one of the earlier International Women's Day rally, the people organizing it are sex worker exclusionary and also trans exclusion, and I agree that people should be inclusive of all people. So International Working Day Rally. Also, there's Utopia International Women's Day, Brisbane, happening at 5 o'clock on Friday at the Barnyard at the Rumpus Room. Very much now time for me to get out of here.
Check out Subversion 1312 online.
Subversion1312.org.
Facebook.com/subanarchyshow. Because that's as close as he's ever gonna get. He's the anarchist with cigarettes. Bobby just hasn't learned it yet. He's the anarchist with cigarettes. The times are changing, but he just forgets. On Twitter, anarchy_show. He's gonna choke on his harmonica outputs. Nothing ever burns down by itself. Every fire needs a little bit of help. Nothing ever burns down by itself. Every fire needs a little bit of. And on the 4ZZZ website, 4ZZZ.org.au.
I think that violence can be even applied to the natural environment because we rely upon the natural environment for our survival. But inanimate objects, especially those that are man-made and are used to destroy life, I don't think you can be violent too. I think it's a lot of times more violent to allow them to exist.
Nothing ever burns down by itself. Every fire needs a little bit of help. There is a certain social process which is known and very visible, but perhaps not acknowledged as much as it should be. It is that one where a new idea, or an old one in new form, is accepted by a minority, while the majority are shouting treason, rubbish, kook, communist, anarchist, capitalist, or whatever is the term of abuse valued in that society.
Infringer.
And they develop this idea, at first probably in secrecy or in semi-secrecy, and then more and more visibly, with more and more support, until, guess what? This seditious, impossible, wrong-headed idea becomes what is known as received opinion, and is loved and valued by the majority.
Conclusion?
In a democracy, the ignorant and meddlesome outsiders, the general population, have to be kept from interfering. They can be spectators, but not participants.
No matter how much legal action you put behind this, people are going to do what they want to do.
Spectators, but not participants.
It's time to talk about censorship.
Send this song to 20 people.
And isn't it stealing?
At your name, don't break the cycle.
From people to people.
Pass it along.
People like MP3s.
Pass it along.
How about trying this future on for size?